put it closer to you. We're back. I'm going to put this blanket around me like an old lady. Is that why you brought it out?
I bought it if you wanted to sit on there, if your bottom was cold. Because my bottom was cold on the log stump. I thought you might want a warm bottom.
Well, if I get cold.
Yes.
It's a bit itchy. But, yeah, it's been a couple of weeks, isn't it?
Yeah.
And we're back. And obviously, while we've been away, everybody has read all of those books that we talked about.
Including us.
We've read loads of books and not at all been busy with other things.
Why are you drinking more caffeine?
Huh?
Why are you drinking more caffeine? Save it for later. The first thing you said to me when I came was, I've had so much caffeine today. Okay. I'm like, ugh. And then you're about
to
drink more. Just
because. And I'll let you in on a secret.
What?
Caffeine's addictive.
Oh, really? Well, I've had my cup of tea and my cup of matcha for now. And then I'll have
matcha
some
now.
Matcha, it's all about the matcha.
Oh, I was looking so up the other day. I might start getting into kombucha. Because
I really like
kombucha.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I saw a man make it. This is irrelevant for a podcast. But I saw a person who, he bought one bottle.
Mm-hmm.
And for the price of a second bottle,
mm-hmm.
he bought ingredients that made another 12 bottles.
Yeah, yeah,
he was like, you just pour it in and you know, it's like sourdough thing.
Yeah, so you have the mother.
So you have a, it's called a Scooby.
A Scooby.
But yeah, fermented foods are definitely
it's the future,
the
isn't
thing,
it?
Isn't it?
But so that's, you have your little kombucha like bubbling away in the corner.
Have you
ever
Scooby
like, what the heck
and you
is that?
Add like black tea bags
yeah.
to it all the time?
Yeah, I'll get into that.
Yeah,
let's do it
maybe
here.
We should, something's growing in it. that'd be yeah. Come to the woods. They're cool and they brew this fermented mold drink.
Oh
you
my
can
God.
Have yeah, because we need
don't
that.
Think we're weird already.
I think you yeah well. As the revelation has come that before you worked here, people thought I was a nut job in the woods.
Running a cult. Mm.
Gemma has recently told me that before she joined, that her friends had the perception that there was just a man running a...
An illegal school.
It wasn't. I was doing toddler groups. I was doing forage school.
A weird hippie in the woods running an illegal school. How is he allowed to do that? Who is he?
Who even is that guy?
Yeah.
But yeah. So, we're going to talk about just one of the books.
Yes. We're going to talk about The Whole Brain Child by Dr. Daniel J. Siegel and Dr. Tina Payne Bryson.
So, you finished it yesterday.
Yes.
And full disclosure, and you have the book in front of you with your
yes.
notes. Full disclosure, I finished it about 2 or 3 weeks ago. I have no notes in front of me, so there may be things that I go, I don't remember. So, I'm going more as an impressionist view of the book rather than a nitty-gritty. But, I guess, so from the offset, would you say it's a valuable book?
I would say it's a valuable book. I would especially say it's a valuable book if you haven't read much like it before. So I initially found out about it. I think we've talked about Ruby Wax's No Brainer quite
mm-hmm,
a lot in the podcast
mm-hmm.
recently.
Yeah.
So she actually
that is
talks,
valuable.
That is valuable.
Is
and,
super
she,
valuable.
And she talks to Daniel Siegel on that show. And so that's how I became aware of him. And then I read a thing from the, you know how the Forest School Association kind of bulletin that comes
mm-hmm.
out each week,
mm-hmm.
one of the links was to a blog a practitioner had written, and she gave a kind of list of books at the end and said that it was good. So that's how I found out about it. And then reading some reviews about it yesterday, some reviewers kind of describe it as a love child of other authors and other books. So there's been lots
okay.
of books that have come before it that have
fed into this book.
Yes, exactly. So it's not completely new. It's like a...
That was a thing. So I remember I looked up the main author,
Daniel Siegel.
On Amazon, and they come up as quite, you know, you can go on quite a whole sort of rabbit hole of clicking on that author, and then they also work with that author, and they also work with that, and so it looks like they've kind of been been putting these ideas and theories out for a while, and this is the 2019 modern palatable, which I think there's value in that. I think a lot of people so we're talking about, you know, what is it? Is it the California report for play working?
Oh, Colorado.
The Colorado report.
Paper, yeah.
Which is like dry as all hell. And sort of, but because it exists, people don't touch it. Whereas I do think there's a role for authors to be going, I'm not going to change, you know, I'm not going to necessarily add to this.
Mm.
I'm just going to reformat it for a different audience.
Yes, and I think that's very much what this is. And so... whereas its predecessors were focused completely on the neuroscience. Mm-hmm. This is all about the neuroscience, so it is, but it's adding a layer of kind of emotional stuff on top and also explaining it through a lot of illustrations and diagrams. And so I think we were talking the other day about how there's lots of kind of strategy, so it's very practical, isn't it? It's very like, here's the science and here's the strategy that you can do.
And maybe touching into childcare workers.
Yeah.
But I would say childcare workers could do with something a slightly more academic than this. I think this is like,
it depends bull- who.
I think this is bullseye for parents.
Yeah.
And I think for a lot of educators,
yeah,
they might need something a bit meatier.
I don't know. It depends. I think it depends who you're addressing. If you're addressing childcare workers who like read all the time and like gen up on theory all the time,
good childcare workers.
Yeah, or just, you know, just childcare workers with the time at hand to do that, you know, just reflective. Practitioners, then maybe. But it struck me, I was rereading a chapter yesterday, and it was kind of talking about the way the brain works, and it's talking about the left brain, right brain. So that's how it kind of starts, and it talks and it makes it very simple. So it talks about left brain, right brain, and upstairs brain and downstairs brain being and talking a lot about how to integration between those different elements, and that's when you're kind of calm and happy and that's your kind of place of well-being. And it was talking about one of the particular strategies to integrate the left and right hand sides of the brain, and then it had this kind of paragraph that was really defensive and was like, that's not to say you just kowtow to all of little Johnny's demands, like that's not to say that blah 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 blah. And when I read that, I'm like, well, of course I'm not, you know, but I think that it's written very much from a kind of like, this is for all parents and all people who work with children. Those it was almost like kind of going, trying to persuade those people who wouldn't already have that kind of understanding of children, or that, you know, trying to persuade those people who go, well, they're just being naughty and they just need to be told. It was like, well, actually those people can read this book too and they might be persuaded. Whereas people who already feel that way might kind of go, oh, you know, it's a little bit defensive or a bit like, yeah, do you see what I mean?
I do. I think there's a touch at the start, so yeah, they're talking left brain, right brain, upstairs brain, which they're talking about higher cognition and metacognition, and low brain, which is your reptilian fight or flight, doing whatever. And I think because I'd read something else recently that kind of was like, that the left brain, right brain thing is complete arse.
Yeah.
Physiologically, stuff goes wherever it needs to. But there's a concept some people talk about called, like, it's like useful lies that we tell, or useful, you know, useful lies that society has to tell. Like, we have to tell all children that, like, oh, good people always come out in the end, because even though that's not true, you need to tell that to children, because, you know. And it struck me as a little bit like that at the start of the book, where it's like, oh, the other one is Shintoism, you know, where all objects have a personality and feelings. And, like, whether or not that is true, you treat things, you know, like, you treat your items with respect, which has a benefit.
Yeah.
Even if it's not true.
Yeah.
And I think that's where this book sits, is like, even if that's not true, approaching behaviour in an upstairs, downstairs, left, right thing will get you positive results. If that, and maybe that's the palatable way to think about it.
Yeah.
Without going into like, oh, well, the cortisol is moving around the left upper quadrant, which will did out this sign. You know, that's, you need something that you can remember at the point when that toy truck is flying towards your face. You need something that you can latch onto.
Completely.
Completely.
And at the back, it's got some very, like, once you've read the book in detail, it then has
it's like age and stage,
kind
isn't
of
it?
Age and stage kind of tables and little mnemonics to remember, so exactly that, so that it's really practical. It's like, this
and
is how
you. And did you see they recommend photocopying, or that's really old,
fridge sheet,
putting it on the fridge, and then so that also if nanny and granddad come and babysit, it's really quick for them to read. And a bit like we said, Okay Not to Share is a fantastic book because each chapter has a like
script.
Okay, but in the real world, this is how you deal with it. It's like this whole not high-minded, this very utopian idea of behavior, and then it's boiled down into like, okay, but in the real world, this is how you're going to approach it, and this is how we, you know.
Yeah.
And I guess that's where maybe that defensive paragraph comes in of like, in this ideal world, but also that I find it, and this is true, I think, of a lot of, I'm using air quotes now, parenting books, or books for, like, how to be a good child and all this stuff. And they kind of work on this premise they go linearly through age, and they work on the premise that you're introducing stuff at like toddlerhood, and then they go like, when your 11-year-old is doing this, and the example they've got in their book is someone who introduced this at five or at four, whereas if you pick up these books now and your child is already say seven, you've got to go, right, I've got to mismatch this back together and go, oh, actually they might need some stuff from the five-year-old thing, or they might need some stuff. And they get, so, I keep talking about other books when I'm talking about this book, but maybe that's the point.
This book is good because it doesn't do that, I think. Apart from this age and stage thing at the back, each chapter does cover just like humans in general, and that's what I quite liked about it. Okay. But it's also talking about parenting. It's talking about like what's happening in your brain when you're parenting, and there are challenging moments. So I find that really refreshing, rather than, because sometimes, you know, you read something and you go, okay, I believe in this and I agree with you, but it's kind of stressing me out because this is another thing that I have to get right. This is another thing that I have to remember as a parent. And if I fail at this too, then my kid's going to end up being completely destroyed. Whereas in this, it's very much, this is what's happening in your brain. And there's that bit, the page that I was just on.
Oh, sorry, I didn't realise you were on a page.
No, that's all right. It's talking about like kind of making a narrative out of your own life and reflecting on your childhood. And once you've done that, then
you do your own gas mask first,
and you can parent better. And it's talking about linking into all this ACEs, you know, adverse childhood experiences theory, that even if you have had trauma in your own childhood or a less than perfect childhood, you can still parent really effectively if you can make sense of your life through a narrative and then come to terms with it. Were there any kind of strategies in there that you thought, oh yeah, I'll use that, or even I am already using that, but because I found like I was
I wrote down that I now I've remembered a note that I did write down when I so I think the start, so cards on the table, I think this book got less helpful for me the longer it went on. First the book was like, oh my god, crazy first chapter, okay, I get that. Towards the end I was kind of going, I've picked this up from other places, not that it's not valuable, but for me it's other places. I think this is the child version, particularly at the start, this is the child version of non-violent communication.
Do you reckon?
Because non-violent communication is repeating back, it sounds like you're feeling such and such, it sounds like you're feeling such. And the first chapter of this book is like, meet the right brain and go, it looks like you're really angry. And I was going, that is non-violent communication for children.
Completely.
And every time I've read non-violent communication, I'm on like my third or fourth go round of it. It's something I like topping up on. But every time I read it, I come out with this really good, like, oh, this is great. But he's so wordy. And, you know, his examples are like, I was talking to two UN peace leaders. And you're like, right, I need a, how do I do this to a three-year-old who's upset with the four-year-old to push his tower over? Some Hamas, like, genocide. I need the small version. And I think that's what the start of this book is. So that, for me, was not necessarily a new technique, but one that I went,
That makes sense. Do you want to just pause and explain what that technique is? So it's talking about like left brain being logic, language, the letter of the law, all the, you know.
Yes, that was the bit I liked. Letter of the law. So when they're talking about when children go like, I am in bed, I'm just jumping on it. Whereas the right brain spirit of the law is the like, you wanted me to go to sleep. It's the implicit stuff.
Yeah, and the emotions and all that kind of stuff. So it's talking about, that, you know, they use the word tantrums or like moments of high, high emotion,
high need,
dysregulation. They give an example about a seven-year-old boy who gets up in the middle of the night, comes down to see his mom, and he's really angry. She thought he was asleep. And he's like, I'm really angry because you don't leave me a note in the middle of the night, and I hate homework, and la la la. And she's just like, whoa.
Just throws it all out.
What the heck? And so it's got little cartoons, which are kind of slightly cheesy, but I think help you to remember the point that they're illustrating.
I have a different view on the cartoons, but we'll come back to
it. I prefer the other cartoons that aren't the parent and child ones. I prefer the kind of illustrations of the theories.
Inner monologues.
I really like those.
Those are good, yeah.
Anyway, and it kind of gives the two ways that the mum can react to that. And so one of them is like, what are you doing out of bed? This is really late. You need to go back up to bed right now. I don't understand what you're talking about. As for homework, I can't do anything about that now. And I didn't even know you wanted me to leave your note.
Go to bed. Left brain meeting right brain.
Exactly, which is just going to hit a complete brick wall and he's going to flip even more and it's going to be really drawn out. And then the other one, which is talking about connect and redirect. So connecting with the right brain. So he's in a right brain emotional flood. He's not going to respond to logic right now. You need to hug him, stroke him, go, that sounds really hard. I feel like that sometimes too. Come and sit with me for a bit. And when, and it describes how she can feel him physically relaxing.
Yeah, release and,
and then it might come out in tears. And then after that, after a bit of soothing and stroking, then it can be, okay, well, I see where you're coming from about this, but it's, you know, it's late now. Let's talk. I've got some ideas about that. Let's sort this out in the morning.
I think the worry then, people have when they hear that as an idea is that in their head, the logic left brain, what are you doing? It's late. You need to go back to bed. That's a shorter investment.
Yeah.
Because on the face of it, you go, I'm going to tell him it's time for bed and I'm going to do this and he's going to go back up to bed.
Yeah.
Once you kind of go, once you go, that doesn't happen. What you've now got is a 20-minute argument.
Yeah. Yeah.
If you go, you can have a 20-minute argument or 7 minutes of compassion.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes, the compassion is harder because you have to kind of go,
yeah,
right, let me approach this properly. But if you go into the aggression one going, well, if I fight him on this, actually that's going to cost me more in the long run.
Which is very similar to Your Baby and Child by Penelope somebody or other, who I just love that book from having a newborn. And she describes exactly the same when babies are crying in the night. So you might go, I know my baby's not hungry, so I'm just not going to feed the baby and I'm going to let them cry for a bit and just leave it because then they'll learn. Don't do that, because actually they won't. They need you, and you know, whether or not they're hungry, they need you, and it's better to go to them straight away, give them what they need, whether it be milk or a hug or whatever. And then even though it's harder because you have to get out of bed and you have to give that and be there, you're going to get more sleep overall. And she has a little diagram of like, here's the mum that goes, oh no, let them cry, let them cry, let them cry. She lies there listening to them crying, awake, you know, whereas the mum that gets up, or I should say parent really rather than mum, you know, yes, it's difficult, it's more difficult, but it's, you get more sleep in the long run. It's very similar.
I think that's a different, I think that's gonna derail this. Can I make a comment on the cartoons?
Yes.
That has clarified as we, this is what I like about doing the podcast, it's clarified in my head as we've been talking, because I was about to say, I really dislike the parent and child cartoons in this, because like the non-violent communication, they are such farcical examples of like, kid comes down and goes like, oh, I'm really sad about the thing, and you go, oh, shut up, and then you know, or that they, it was like, there's one where all they did was reflip the word, so it was like, not what did you do at school today, it was like, did you enjoy school today or something? And the cartoon kid has a completely different response and immediately goes like, oh, thank you, father, I'm so lucky to have you, and all this arse. But what I think the goal is, and this is clarified as we're talking, is in a cartoon, they are simplifying down a much longer conversation.
Mm.
And if they put in a cartoon that actually was a realistic conversation, it would get lost. You'd get lost in the weeds.
Yeah, yeah.
Whereas what they're trying to do is giving you the kind of like the beats, the beats of the conversation.
Yeah.
If you, and rather than the nitty gritty. Yeah. So it's almost a like,
and I
think sometimes they could, almost the speech bubbles need labeling with like compassionate connection, child responds, left brain connection, child, you know, so that you can, you're not so tied, because the cartoons do make it seem like, if you didn't go deeper into them, then it would seem like, oh well, in the cartoon that
instantly happened.
That dad talked to his son and said, I need you to stop now, and the son stopped, and I don't understand. And
what I do like about the cartoons is that they make you have an emotional response when you look at them. So if you look at the eyebrows of the characters again, and it's symbolic rather than literal.
Yep.
In the options like this one, so this is the one we're talking about with the kid coming down in the middle of the night, and both of their eyebrows are like downwards and cross, and then they're sort of very exaggerated up and caring in this one, which is like, when you look at it, you're kind of like corny, but actually you do have a kind of emotional like, oh, like your eyebrows, my eyebrows do that as well. I'm looking at the picture, which is really interesting. And then I think that you will be more likely to remember that when you have a similar experience. You'll be like, oh, the eyebrows in this position feeling, the sympathetic compassionate response, oh, I can feel my eyebrows doing the cross thing, that's bad, don't do that, you know, when you're in the heat of the moment, when you're going to have an emotional memory from looking at the cartoon. I really, really liked in the first chapter, and I've told lots of people about this, not just in terms of children, but in terms of all of us.
Oh, this river.
Yeah, so it talks about mental health and talks about how mental illness is frequently described and talked about research, but that we don't actually know in everyday life that much about good mental health, like what is good mental health and what does it look like. And so it kind of boils it down to kind of basics and says that it gives an analogy of you in a canoe on a river, and the river is the river of well-being, and you and otherwise known as forest school.
Yes.
And you're just skipping through the trees of the forest of well-being.
If you're listening to this and you're about to set up a new forest school, please can you call it the River of Well-being? Or maybe the Forest of Well-being.
The Forest of Well-being.
I think as long as we get some sort of royalties off it, I'll be happy.
Yeah. And then you're floating along in your canoe and you're in this state of mind where you're really flexible and adaptive and stable, and you're able to understand yourself and the world. And then if you veer too much towards the right brain, that's the bank of chaos, so nothing makes sense, you're just in an emotional flood. And if you go towards too much down the left brain route, then you're going to hit the bank of rigidity, which is where the water's really stagnant, there are reeds, you can't move forward, you're really stuck, and you're kind of stuck in this place. And I really liked that. I thought that was a really nice way of kind of, you could analyse quite a lot of sort of life experiences using that and go,
I think the bit that I like that about that most, and it may not be there, it may not have been their intention, but the use of it being a river, I think, is important to that, because if it was a road, there would be this idea that you just steer, whereas a river has its own will, and say, like, sailing and is it still called sailing when you're in a canoe?
Kayaking.
Okay, yeah. Let's call it kayaking. But it involves a lot of what they call tacking. Mm. So although you are going straight forwards, you are moving a little bit left, a little bit right, a little bit left,
And it's a mixture of the water being life. Life is going to take you to places that you can't predict necessarily, but you do have an element of control because you can steer.
Yes.
So it's that mixture of the
but
two.
But on a road, you wouldn't have that.
Yeah.
It would just be like, well, that road is almost that kind of right wing. Well, just pull yourself up by your bootstraps and get on with it.
Yeah, and also a road takes you to, you're travelling because you need to get to the destination, whereas life isn't like that. The whole idea of, you know, going back to kind of the Ruby Wax stuff about being like present and mindful, if you're kayaking in the river, you don't have a destination to go to. You're actually in the moment and enjoying what you can see right now and living right now. You're there not to get somewhere, you're there just to enjoy being alive, and that's surely the point of good mental health. Just enjoying being alive and appreciating it. I thought I quite liked one of the techniques that they talk about, which I thought, I already use that instinctively, but didn't know why necessarily, was the whole thing about like telling stories. So a child has had a traumatic experience, whether it be like falling over and hurting their knee.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Or watching, they give an example of a child who's in a car crash and
their childminder
goes to hospital. The child's okay, but the childminder goes to hospital. And they talk about a big experience like that. We might be tempted to say, like, when the child is still crying about it or seems not okay,
meet it with logic
they're fine now, they're doing this. Yeah, exactly, you just stop thinking about it.
Absolute distraction.
Exactly,
let's do this, let's go and get an ice cream, let's go and do the thing, and that kind of, well, I guess it's a symptom of a larger thing, isn't it, of not dealing with, that's the larger mental health thing, is not dealing with how we feel about stuff, you know, not just children, adults as well, going
completely,
you know, just allow yourself to be sad about this for a bit, or allow yourself to.
But it talks about shifting the experience from the right brain to the left brain through storytelling, and you helping the child to do that. So you being a kind of facilitator and going, what happened? Can you tell me what happened or whatever? And then if they can't, you start them off and go, I saw you running.
Yes.
What happened next? And trying to get them to talk. And if they can't do it, you carry on a bit more and you see if they can finish it off. If they still can't do it, you tell them that story. And then if it's a seriously traumatic event, you will revisit that later. And you know, if they show signs of being worried, you kind of bring this up and get them to tell the story, because it shows them, the idea is that it shows them that it actually is okay in the end.
It's a linear narrative. And they're not circling in this, the car crash and hurt arena.
Yeah.
You start to stop the spiral and start to move it into a linear line that goes, and then they looked after, and then they were home.
Yes.
And so that when they get back into, so that when they start feeling upset again, they've got a path out of it because they know the next bit is such and such and such.
And I guess it also works as a kind of learning tool in terms of like, I ran and then I tripped. And so it's kind of like, oh yeah, I've now logged that memory instead of just being stuck in this thing that maybe next time I'm running in that place, I might avoid the drain because I've remembered that story and it's kind of like a, turns it into a sort of learning experience. What were you going
to
say?
Yeah, did you see me go, because I was desperate to talk. So there's two things. One is that my little boy, he is, you could film what he does when he hurts himself.
Yeah.
And I realised that we do this already.
Yeah.
Because I hurt myself, this was like a month ago, I hurt myself and he watched me hurt myself.
Mm.
But he went, what happened, Daddy?
Mm.
Because when he hurts himself, we go, what happened?
Yeah.
And he, like most children, needs to tell you it. So a bit like that, you know, we were saying earlier about your 20-minute argument or 7 minutes of compassion or whatever. We've worked out that it's quicker, not quicker, but he's over it like that. If he falls over and hurts himself, he will cry for a long time. Unless you go, you can go over him to go, what happened? And he goes, I fell on the grass. And then that's part of it.
Yeah.
And sometimes if he's still not okay with that, then if we go, you know, if it's me, I'll go, do you want to go and tell mummy? And he just goes upstairs and I'll hold him with it. And he just goes up and goes, mummy, I fell over and I hit my head on the grass. Yeah. She goes, oh dear. And he goes, okay now.
Yeah.
And then goes off.
Yeah.
Second thing that I wanted to say is there is a cartoon in there. And when I read it, I closed the book in anger because it's a dad talking to his kid. And the kid is clearly upset about something that happened at the park.
Mm-hmm.
And his dad's like, do you want to, or maybe it's not at the park. But anyway. The dad is like, oh, do you want to do this? And the kid's like, no, I don't want to. And the dad's like, is it because of what happened at the park? And the kid's like, no, I don't really want to talk about it. And the dad's like, let me talk about it with you. And the book is like, if they say they don't want to talk about it, you then go in with as much of the story as possible.
Yeah,
and you,
it's quite controversial,
and
isn't it?
I didn't like that because I think, because they weren't looking for, maybe they meant it implicitly, but I would have put in something that says, like, if they say they don't want to talk about it, but you can see them shifting uncomfortably, or you can see something that, some sort of non-verbal communication that says, actually, I'd like you to help me get there. But they don't have that. What they have is a child who says they don't want to talk about it.
Mm.
And I think you're then on the verge of disrespecting their wishes by saying, I don't really want to talk about it. And you going, no, I'm going to bring up this trauma for you because it becomes an I thing. It becomes, because I think it will be beneficial for you.
Yeah.
And I kind of think that there's some degree of subtlety or nuance that I felt was missing from that bit. And I felt like the book was recommending that you bring up trauma immediately.
Right.
And that didn't sit well with me. Again, I read it about a month ago.
Yeah. I know what you mean. That bit is interesting. There are some bits where it recommends that you try to explain to your child how their brain works and strategies and share the techniques with them. And there's some kind of cartoons that are for showing to your children if they're old enough to read and old enough to understand, which I kind of like the theory of. I would like to test that out and see if it works. And I wonder whether in that situation, rather than going, it's, you know, let's talk about the trauma, that then you go in with, let me show you the cartoon, or let me explain to you why it's good to talk about trauma and maybe we'll come back to it later type thing.
I think the book kind of implies that that's a one-off conversation, that you have this conversation about how their brain works and then that children basically then get it.
Mm.
Whereas I think it could do with some, like, this is the main bulk of, like, also with all these things, they sound really good in principle to be like, don't talk about when they're in a high mood. Mm. Wait until they're in a good place and they're doing all this. Sorry, I've talked really quiet. When they're in a good place and they're in a calm mood. But when they're in a good place and a calm mood, the last thing you want to do is be like, hey, do you know what? I'm going to bring up that time when you were completely off the rails.
I don't think the book says that. I think the book, that's in the section where it's talking about fear of new things, isn't it?
Talking more generally about, you know, this compassionate approach. Lots of people will say, do it when they're in a good place.
Right.
But then when they're in a good place, you kind of go, I don't want to rock the boat here and do whatever.
No.
Go on.
I quite like that idea, really, though, of, because you know, every child we know will have a fear that from our perspective just seems very unexplainable. Like, I really don't understand why you're afraid of going to this place, because it is kind of going, okay, you can't just be scared for no reason. You must have had some trauma. Let's find out what that is. Let's dig around in there and find out what the trauma is. And yeah, I don't know, because I kind of like to try that out in a way. So I know a child, for example, who won't go to the doctors and just will not go, even though they know, well, they don't know, I tell them, nothing bad is going to happen. It's not going to be a painful thing. They're not going to have any vaccinations. They're not going to, you know, they're just going to sit there and chat. And even when the child gets in the car, and even when you, you know, manage to get them, okay, let's get in the car, let's go, sees the building and like flinches massively. And it's like, well, I can't remember a time where something has happened that's traumatic there, but there must be something that I mean, have forgotten.
I think sometimes we because as an adult, so much of your the things that make up your fears and hopes are, I would say, a majority of your experiences. But what I think sometimes what we forget is that for children, a lot of their hopes and fears are built on hearsay. So it might not even be that they've had an that they've had an experience. It could be they've heard at a Christmas party some other adults not related to you talking about how they're,
or just their friends or something they've seen in the media, you know, some TV show.
And that's really hard because then if you start digging around and you go, well, you haven't had any experience and you haven't, and you go, right, but that might be the issue. The issue might be that the only experience they have is a hearsay conversation, which is
it's very tricky.
It's
very, it talks about implicit and explicit memory in the book, which is quite interesting as well. So it talks in that section, it talks about things that you remember without realizing that you're remembering it, which is really tricky to deal with, because it's almost the same if it's just hearsay. It's the same if they've their mate has told them it's bad.
It's by osmosis almost.
But they can't remember being told that. All they know is the fear, and the fear is very real. And they can't actually remember that conversation with their friend where their friend told them it was awful. So how the heckins do you unpick that? Like, it, that's why it's recommending like digging around and trying to find it. But it is potentially dangerous, because if you as a parent go, well, I think it's this, I think it's that time we went and bloody bloody blah, and they're going, no, just like the kid in the cartoon, and you're going, yes, I'm sure it's that, really try and remember, and actually it's nothing to do with that. And in fact, that's interesting, because
and if you
I went to counselling once, right? And the counsellor was kind of doing this, you know, in the, this technique of like you talk and then the counsellor repeats back what you said.
Okay.
So that's really enlightening, and it really is quite kind of like, oh God, why do you think that? And they go, because you just said it. And you're like, oh, right, okay. But there were definitely times where the counsellor was kind of going, oh, so it sounds like that thing you mentioned was also really traumatic. So not only have you got this trauma, you've also got this trauma. And I was like, no. No, I really, you know, it, it did feel like the counsellor was like stirring it up and kind of adding more stuff in. I was like, oh, I'm not actually here about that. I'm here, you know, I haven't, if I had 2 years of counselling and time to deal with all that, then maybe, yes, let's get everything out of the suitcase at the same time. But I don't. So I stopped going, because I was like, can't be doing that. And maybe
that's got to be more to do with that person's approach rather than counselling in general.
Oh, of course. You know. Definitely. And I wouldn't not go. For sure. But I want, that just reminded me of this technique of like, let's find your trauma and talk about it. And if they're telling you, no, that was not traumatic for me, you are potentially making it traumatic by going, no, no, it was, right? It was. And that's why you're scared now, right?
Yeah.
That's interesting.
That, yeah, that's the kind of, yeah, I, when I saw that cartoon, I was like, I need to close this. But I actually told my wife, I was like, look at what this book is recommending. Because she's, works with people who've got depression and anxiety, so she, from a very similar point of view as this counsellor, was kind of going, Jesus, like, no, no, it's not, I don't know, but I think it's coming from a good place, if you know what I mean. It is done with absolutely the best intention. It just, that one recommendation sort of missed the mark for me. But I do think there's value in the book, and value in having something that is, like we were saying earlier, accessible and palatable. And
yeah, and I think also, if you did, like, if you've read It's Okay Not to Share, and if you haven't, like, what are you doing? Go read it right now. But if you have read that and you liked it, there are some kind of crossover things there, but with a bit more of a science background.
They've got a big chunk of OK Not to Share in this book.
Oh, have they?
Yeah.
Oh,
I remember seeing a big, you know, big paraphrased kind of...
Right. Because I quite like that whole thing of you as a parent being more flexible and not rigid, which is all very OK Not to Share. And, like, doing them, they talk about, like, you tell your kid that something's going to happen or they're going to do something and they express displeasure at that, and you saying, oh well, okay, convince me then, convince me of your idea, or can you come up with a solution that works for both of us, and getting them to problem solve, which I really liked. And there's lots of things in there just about exercises, like doing exercises through family conversation, which you might think is just having a chat, but actually is exercising the integration of the brain, which I quite liked.
Definitely. Cool. Good, right. Well, are you keen to hear everybody else's thoughts?
Yes.
If anybody's read it over the summer, drop us a message and let us know what you think. Or
Or if you've got any other recommendations where you're like, oh, this book like that, but better.
Or stuff
steer clear of this book because I didn't like it or whatever. And that'll...
Send someone to recommend something that's going to rile us up.
Yeah.
Oh, you know what? Okay, so I didn't watch it. I know lots of people did.
Oh,
there was
the
a thing.
Training
there was a thing
program
on the UK TV called How to Train Your Child Like a Dog. Now, I didn't watch it, but it got a lot of flack. And I wonder whether that's... Anyway, we'll leave it there. I'm really cold now.
Yeah,
we've been
I know.
Sat still.
I'm about to run a session.
But it was good to
get
be back.
The fire on.
Okay. Bye, guys.